Mr. Valance, Reel 5. We were talking about your time when the Shermans had arrived at Chippenham Camp, and we were discussing everything we could about the Shermans. You were mentioning the 75mm, the stripping and cleaning, and I think you got to where you were zeroing it.
Yes, I went back on the Fidel system, one took out the breech block and looked through the barrel, and on the outside end of the barrel, a cross bar was incised. So you found a piece of cotton from somewhere and a blob of grease, and you put four blobs on the end of the barrel where these grooves were, and you put two pieces of cotton across so that you had a cross. You then got into the turret, looked through, and lined this up on some object. And then the gunner zeroed his telescope onto that object. And that was how the sights were set.
How did the gunner adjust his telescope?
There were knobs either side of the screws, and he could adjust that. For the fine adjustment.
So it's a bit primitive. Did it work? I mean,
well, it did, but the test came when you fired the first shot. It was very primitive, but that's how we did it.
Now, anything else while you were at Chippenham, really? Because in June 43, you moved to Rudston.
Right.
Is that the next thing?
Or yes, I think so, yes.
Now, what was the setup at Rudston?
Well, we were in squadron groups in small sites with just mission huts and marquees. I think their dining hall was a marquee. We slept in the Nissen hut and grew from about six, I suppose, in the squadron. And really, we were then individually well and truly fully trained. From Rudston, we did take part in one or two very large exercises.
Is this Black Cock and Eagle?
Yes.
What do you remember of these big exercises? What would you do on the... You weren't spare crew anymore, of course, but
no,
I mean...
No, I was then a radio operator. Well, you load up your tank, first of all, with the preparation, your bedding, such as it was, you rolled it up in a ground sheet and you rolled the bedding rolls up in a bivouac tarpaulin and strapped it onto the back of the tank. And we didn't at that stage carry live ammunition at all. And then we would go to our assembly area and then take part in what was really the preparation for Normandy.
Do you remember them separately, the Black Cock and Eagle, or together, sort of thing?
Vaguely together. Yes.
So, what would you do on an exercise?
Well, we would advance in a divisional column. There would be the battalions on foot or in vehicles, and the armoured regiments, the gunners, all arms. And we would go do just the same as we did in war, except there was no enemy. In some cases, there were enemy, friendly enemy, and umpires to say, who had been knocked out, etc. And you would just advance one day, stop in a farmyard or a field overnight, and go on another day, retreat if necessary. I don't really remember retreating, but I suppose we did. And,
now, what about, there was also a firing camp in
Kirkcudbright, yes, yeah.
Do you remember that at all? Because that would be presumably the first time you'd fire them.
Yes, it would be. It would be. I do remember going there because I remember very well got as far as Darlington. I think it was Darlington. Either Darlington or York.
Were you driving or on the train?
We were on the train. And we pulled up outside the station and we all peered out and we could see smoke coming from one of the flats. And as luck would have it, it turned out that it was the flat that my tank was on. And one of the wheels had seized on that. And the smoke was coming from there. So it was unhitched. And myself and the driver were left to look after it and to put it on, get it up to Kikubi somehow. Well, we went and had a cup of tea or something from the station. And we said, oh, you know, how long is it going to be? He said, oh, well, it won't be moving today. And so we said, well, we'll go down and investigate the pubs. And we were approaching a pub and we looked along and saw the railway line and lo and behold saw the flat, or a flat, with my tank on, trundling along the line. And we ran across fields and flagged it down and jumped on. And apparently the thing was all right. They didn't need to change the wheel before it seized. And we just hitched on to different trains, and I think we eventually caught the original train up somewhere and got up to Kikubi.
And what about the actual firing practice there? What was the range like?
Oh, yeah. Very good. It was made up. There were the static points which you fired first of all, because you were up there for something, I don't know, a week or 10 days, and we did the static firing to ensure we got the aim right and so on, and the guns were properly zeroed. And we finished up doing a battle run.
What was that?
Well, that is a large area of countryside in which you drove round and targets popped up here and there on the way and you re-engaged them and so on. And very realistic and you know, very good training.
And you'd fire at
oh, yes,
the time.
Yes,
and what sort of targets were, I mean, did they have the thing of having, some of them were Allied targets and others were German targets, or were they all German?
They were all made up things. A silhouette of a tank with a cross on it and infantry with wearing German hats, helmets, and that sort of thing. And not only did they pop up, they also pop down very quickly, and you had to be on the ball to get them.
And would you hit the target? I mean,
oh, yes, yes. And there were so some hulks of real tanks that were out there which you could engage as well. It was nice when they cheered and made a big flash. It was very cold. It was winter when we were there. We slept in largest huts, and each had two very large stoves in the centre, combustion. And the great thing to do is to go to the next hut, pretend to look for somebody, and when nobody was watching, slip a .5 round in their fire, and then come out quickly. That was very funny.
Well, that would make a fair explosion, wouldn't it?
It would make a good bang and a lot of smoke.
And back at Rudston, anything else happening at Rudston? Because you moved into billets in just up the road in Bridlington,
in
I think.
Bridlington, yes. The winter in Bridlington. I can't really recall anything of note in Rudston, apart from going on these exercises.
And Bridlington, where were you in Bridlington?
Bridlington, we were just inland from the promenade. The streets, the houses were all empty. They were requisitioned and we slept in the houses. I think they have mostly been lodging houses or boarding houses. And the tanks were lined up in the streets outside. We paraded in the streets and dined in the, what would have been a church ball, I suppose. I do recall one nice little incident where I was on guard one night and went still on one drone and walked up and down the road where the squadron tanks were lined up nose to tail. And for 2 hours at a time, and this cold night, I knew there was a fire in our house where we were billeted, and temptation proved too much, and I slipped in there for an hour, I think. Well, sometime later, I woke up in front of the fire and realized it's been much longer than an hour, and dashed out down to it. And of course, my relief was already posted. And he said, "Oh, well, you're in trouble. We looked everywhere for you." So I had to go and try and bluff the guard commander that I'd been there all the time. He knew I hadn't, but he accepted it. It was a very serious offence to have been reported. So a little incident I'm not likely to forget.
How were you, did you get on? You were still a trooper, weren't you, at this time?
Yes, indeed.
How did you get on with your NCOs, as a rule?
Very friendly. Very friendly. Because they were all, at that stage, all territorials. And most of the regiment all came, well, the squadron I was in came from, that's the golf course, they all came from the same town. They all knew each other well. And other squadrons came from, one came from Cooper, mine came from Fife. And they were really not like regular NCOs.
Were there any particular characters amongst the NCOs that, you know, that you'd already spotted by this time, not later in action, but at the time?
Well, because the Sergeant Major, he was the fearsome character.
Who was he? Do you remember his name?
Yes, his name was Granger. I can't remember his surname, Dickie or something like that. But,
his first name, you mean?
Yes.
Yeah. And he was, what was he like?
In fact, he was a nice chap, but he put on a, as all Sergeant Majors do, a fearsome appearance. No, they were all a pretty good bunch. I say we were friendly. I wasn't friendly enough, really, to these people.
What about the officers? Did any at that stage stand out as either good or bad officers?
No, not to me at that stage. They were all just officers.
Now, one little thing that they did was they did a bit of a test on driving through a river, while they were there in this area. I think it was on Operation Eagle or Blackcock. They did it, but everyone went with drove a waterproof tank through a river. Did you remember that at all, or was it just the drivers?
I don't remember that at all. No.
Anything else then about Bridlington? Because the next move was to Aldershot, I think, in March.
No, the King visited us at Bridlington.
What's your memory of that?
Well, I remember very little, because that day I was the duty telephonist on the exchange in RHQ. But I do remember that we paraded for him along the front, and we had rehearsals for that. But on the actual day, I was in the cubby hole on the switchboard. I do remember, there were lots of rumours that we were moving.
How did you feel about... I mean, when you read history, they always say the men were dying to get into action, the men wanted to, you know, you were frustrated at not being able to get away. I mean, is that really what you felt, or were you really quite happy to stay in Bridlington for the rest of the war? I mean,
in a sense, both things are true. We were quite happy there, and it was. We were in no hurry to leave, but at the same time, most of the regiment had been training since 1939. We were already up to about 43. And you know, the feeling was, well, let's get it over and get it done and get back home. But as I was saying, there was lots of rumours about where we were moving to. And I took advantage of the fact that I'd been on this switchboard, and I kidded everybody that I'd overheard where we were going. And believe it or not, I told them we were going to Aldershot. And and of course, we turned out we did go to Aldershot.
And you hadn't, you were just guessing.
Just guessing, completely. And I just thought, well, it'd be somewhere down south, and I just said Aldershot.
Now, what were your duties when you were on telephonist? Switchboard.
You got the incoming calls, and you put them to whichever person or squadron that they needed to go on the switchboard.
Was that just one of those ones with a wire?
Yes, they were plug-in wires. You see. Of course, you could overhear all the conversations if you wanted.
Did you?
Well, sometimes you did, yes. But I didn't hear anything of any note.
Now, the move to Aldershot, that was into, I think, Warburg Barracks, if I'm... You may not have been. I mean,
it was a barracks. I can't remember what it was called.
And that was in round about March 44, according to.
Yes, about that. Yes.
And what were the barracks like? That was your first barracks, wasn't it?
Yes, they were old cavalry barracks, and the stalls for the horses were on the ground floor, and went up iron stairs. And the barrack rooms were above, because there were no horses there in those days. They were used for storing various things. And the tanks were in a wood just outside the barracks.
And were they comfortable barracks?
By today's standards, no, but reasonably comfortable by the standards.
Did you prefer it to huts?
Well,
was it much the same?
Didn't make much difference, really.
And what were you doing at Aldershot?
Well, the main task we did there was to waterproof all the vehicles.
Now, how exactly did you go about that?
Well, first of all, they had to be absolutely spotless. So they were washed down with petrol, really. Smoking legs and petrol and things down. And we had tins of a black tar or pitch that we had to smooth over. I think first of all we painted some adhesive paint on all the joints, and then we stuck this pitch over, and then I think we covered that with some form of tape. And it's quite a big job because there's lots of bolt holes and joints and in a tank underneath and up to, well, right up to the turret level, all the turret ring and the engine cover. And we put the great chutes on the exhaust, which were about 6 foot high above the tank. And we just cleaned them inside of the tanks incessantly, went up every day. And because we were just waiting, you see.
Did you do a test drive into a pond or anything?
No, we didn't. Not that I would. And we also bombed up the tanks with ammunition.
That was a full load?
Yes.
And you hadn't had the side armour put on yet?
No. That was done in Normandy itself.
Any other preparations or last minute training?
No, I remember going on endless runs to keep us fit.
The cross-country runs?
Just on, PT kid. And I do remember to amuse us on one occasion, Joe Louis, the old famed heavyweight, came and visited us and gave a demonstration in the gym.
Was he impressive?
He was, but he was very soft-spoken, gentle-spoken chap, and not like a boxer at all. A nice guy, and not terribly big. Today's heavyweights are giants of chaps, 6'4" or 6", and weighing 16-18 stone. But he was only sort of like the larger chaps in the regiment. Very nice guy.
Anybody spar with him?
Yes, they did. Not me, I think, anyway. That's about all we did there, really.
Did you know any? I mean, I don't suppose you did anything about the D-Day plans at all, other than it was coming?
No. Inside the barracks, in front of the guard room, was built a safe. Built in with bricks, and in that was kept, so we were told, the plans for D-Day and for Normandy, and they were to be opened on a given word. And there was a guard standing out on that 24 hours a day. I can't remember how long it was there for, but for some weeks.
And were you there on D-Day, or had you moved to Gosport?
No, we were there on D-Day.
Did you see any signs of it the day before, or, heightened activity?
The only signs we heard and saw aircraft. And so we guessed something big was going on. Many more aircraft than had been in the air. And then, of course, I first heard of it in the dining hall at breakfast time. Word went round that it had started, and I remember we dashed out and bought a paper to read about it. And very soon after that, we were on the move ourselves.
And that was the move to Gosport, I think.
That's right.
Which is just after, yes, as you say.
Yeah.
And what happened at Gosport? Because that was a sort of...
Well, that was a holding camp where the chaps who went over on D-Day had been sealed off. I don't know how long for in there. And when they left, we went in, of course, we were sealed off. Surrounded by barbed wire, and nobody went in and nobody went out. And we were there a couple of days.
And, they were apparently finalising the waterproofing of the Shermans. I don't know what they mean by that. I mean, was it not? Do you remember that, or was it finished as far as you were concerned? Perhaps they just mean the gun and things like that, because they put waterproofing in the gun, didn't they?
That's right. Yes. Also, what we did there, too, we put explosives around the waterproofing of the turret and the gun, and the chute over the exhaust. So the theory being that if we landed and were opposed, we could blow off the waterproof that was sealing everything up and fight without getting out. That was the finalisation of the waterproofing.
There's also making up the landing ship tank, the LST loads, or the sort of organisation of which tank went where. Were you aware of that at your level?
Yes, yes. It was explained to us that no, the loads would be mixed, so that no one's crew, if a landing craft was sunk, I think it carried four tanks and other little vehicles. If one was sunk, the whole troop wouldn't be on that one. And, so we were mixed up. I think on our landing craft we had a gun and OP tank, and our own tank. I think our two-seater tank was on that, and one from somewhere else, and some infantry, and it was a mixed load. I think we practiced going on, driving on to a landing craft, a mock-up one, a brick thing.
Was that difficult?
No, it was not. I just drive my landing. A ferry, you know, you get the front down and you reversed in. So you could drive out from the end.
And what about the actual the day, so to speak? What do you remember of that? Because you crossed, the channel sort of loading, that's around about the 15th of June to the 17th of June, it seemed to have gone. Do you remember anything about, you know, how it went?
At the crossing? Yes, I remember it.
Where did you embark?
I can't remember now. But we went down wherever it was and back onto these landing craft. We were issued with some odd things, an escape pack, which contained a handkerchief, a silk handkerchief, which had a map of Normandy printed on it. And there was something with a compass in it, and it was a button, which you opened and it was a compass. There was some concentrated chocolate, it was a dreadful stuff, and there are some tablets to keep you awake if you felt tired. And but much more welcome, we were issued with tins of cigarettes, 50 gold flake in a tin, and some self-heating canned soup that you pulled the stopper off and stuck it with a match, lit it, and it fizzed. And it was boiling in a second or two.
Had you had those before?
No. No, we had those for the journey and from when we landed. and we were on this landing craft.
Well, did you stay with the tank, or would you...
No, we stayed with the tank.
So, was that below deck?
Oh, yes. So you wouldn't... They were open. The hold was open to the sky, but we went down an iron ladder to get there. You know, there was a walkway around and a deck on part of the ship. But there, the hold was open. So, you could... if the rain, you got wet. and they were quite deep. Down, and we slept on beside the tank. We were on for 2 days. And when we did cross, we crossed at night in the dark, and absolute panic because another craft came alongside us and made a lot of noise, and a giant wave came up and soaked us all. And we all made a dash for this one little iron ladder in the corner, thinking that their moment had come with a false alarm. And it was daylight when we got to the beach.
So you wouldn't see much in the crossing at all if you were down there?
No. But we were allowed to go up and walk around, so we could.
It popped up. Yeah. Were there many other ships about, or was it just this one you nearly ran into?
No, there were lots. Yes. Came going in both directions. And landed at first light.
What was the scene? Where you landed, I think, Courcelles, but wherever.
Well,
you land direct onto the beach.
Onto the beach.